program, Smith has grown beyond your control. You cannot stop him, but I can.
And if you fail...
I won't.
Do you know what happened to Neo?
He is trapped in a place between this world and the machine world.
Bring me the eyes of the Oracle. And I would give you back your savior.
Mr. Anderson.
Who are you? Look past the flesh and see your enemy.
It's impossible.
Not impossible. Inevitable.
In less than 12 hours, the machines will breach the dock walls.
If we have to give our lives, we give him hell before we do!
Can Zion be saved?
Tonight, the future of both worlds will be in your hands. Or in his.
Mr. Anderson, welcome back. We missed you.
It ends tonight. You've never believed in the one.
I still don't. I believe in him.
The dock is breached!
Here they come.
Neo is doing what he believes he must do.
If you tell me we'll make it, I'll believe you.
We'll make it. We have to.
I don't know what he can do to save us, but I do know that as long as there is a single breath in his body, he will not give up, and neither can we.
Everything that has a beginning has an end.
Everybody, you're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm the host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we conclude our analysis of the Matrix trilogy, the original trilogy. We already covered the Matrix. That was actually covered in two separate episodes. Part one, this is the fourth episode in the arc of Matrix analysis. Matrix 1 was covered in episode 1 and 2. The sequel to the Matrix, Matrix Reloaded, was covered in part 3. Now today we're hitting the third movie, The Matrix Revolutions, and this is our part 4. I think next we're going to... I don't know how I'm going to do this yet. We'll hit Matrix Resurrections as part 5. I haven't seen it yet. We're going to see it tonight, ironically. Then I'm going to do a bonus show only for the supporters on the Animatrix. I don't know if it's going to be a great show. I'll tell you right now. Because there's only really a couple talking points. But you know what? It's going to be a great show. I'll make it fun for you. I'm going to do that as a bonus show for the supporters in January. So today we're going to talk about the third movie, which concluded the trilogy, which apparently now is being, no pun intended, resurrected with the fourth film. Now, the third Matrix movie was released in 2003, okay, which in some ways I love that because that's very reminiscent to the Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion albums, both released on the same day. And then I tried to pay an homage to that by writing two Alien books, Aliens, UFO, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion. I can't talk today. Use Your Illusions 1 and 2, which I released about 6 months apart, just like the Matrix movies. Maybe it was a year apart, and it doesn't matter. So, and I don't remember it being this way, but yeah, the Matrix Reloaded dropped in May 2003, then Matrix Revolutions November 2003, just 6 months apart. Now, again, should you watch it? Do I need to answer that? Yes, you should watch it. It's 2 hours and 9 minutes. Again, violating my policy. Again, disproving my policy of the 90-minute movie. who's in it. It's the same people. Same people as Reloaded, basically. Except Roy Jones Jr. doesn't save the day. If you can believe that. My God. So, I mean, without further ado, I guess, let's just dive into it. We're going to talk about the whole movie. Plot spoilers coming. Then we're going to do an in conclusion, which is going to take... It's going to be an in conclusion of the whole trilogy of Matrix films with the philosophies of the occult that will be revealed to you. So the third movie picks up where the second one leads off. We're on board the Hammer. It's a different ship, right? A different ship like the Nebuchadnezzar, sort of, right? They're looking for other surviving ships, specifically Niobe's, but to no avail. And Morpheus, he's like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you look for Neo in the Matrix? Is he plugged into the Matrix? Because he's kind of knocked out in a coma. Because that's how the second one ended. Remember, he went into the coma and he's not plugged into the Matrix. And Morpheus is like, hey, bros, why don't you check out the Matrix? Maybe Neo's in there. And they're like, bro, he's not even plugged in. How could he be in the Matrix? And foreshadowing a bit, oh, snap, turns out he's able to mentally plug into the Matrix, even though he's simultaneously existing in the real world, in the ship, in the heading to Zion. So again, reiterating the point that this guy is special. He's the savior. And it's very much akin to the idea of Christ going down into Hades during his three-day death, I guess. When he goes down to Hades and, rescues the people from hell. It's kind of in that way. Like, he's kind of in both worlds at the same time. And, of course, all this reference to Jesus Christ will be revealed in my conclusion when we find out that the occultists don't look at Jesus Christ as the same way as the Christians do. Okay? All right. Now, the Oracle, she calls for Morpheus and crew. She's got something explaining to do, right? And this is the film where we get the new actress to play the Oracle because the old one actually died. And she says she's trying to guide Neo because he's trapped in this world between the real world and the machine world. That's why he's in like this coma state, this comatose state. So he's sort of in the goo pod nightmare world, sort of in the real world. How's he living in both worlds simultaneously? And she said he's trapped in a program called the Train Man. And this is the guy who smuggles programs in and out of the Matrix. And turns out the Train Man's boss is the Merovingian. So, of course, Neo's in trouble, right? He's in trouble. He's at the train station. And the Oracle is trying to tell Morpheus, like, look, Neo needs help. He's in this strange realm right now. And you guys screwed the Merovingian over and Reloaded. Because his chick started getting trifling and gave them the location of the Keymaster. Remember that? So then they show us. Meanwhile, at the train station where Neo's in his state of existence, he's talking to this girl named Sati, whose father is Ramachandra. Am I saying that right? Chandra? And if you looked closely at the Merovingian scene from Matrix Reloaded, you noticed there were agents taking away a server at this nightclub who was obviously about to get exiled for being a bad boy. That was Ramachandra, Chandra. And now he's in the train station with Neo. And the Merovingian, he's the one who controls who crosses over between these worlds, and he does it through the Train Man. And Rama wants to rebel for love, also very similar to Neo. Because Rama, he loves his daughter, Sati. And he wants Sati to be saved, so the Train Master gets the whole family on board, but leaves Neo to be stuck for eternity at the station because he's not part of this arrangement. Okay? And you find out that Rama and his wife created Sati, the daughter, but, you know, everything's a program. So Sati is actually a program without a purpose, which defies the Matrix. They created this life form, but she doesn't have a purpose. And if there's no utility in your existence, you don't exist. Very capitalistic sort of idea there. Morpheus and the guardian to the Oracle, Seraph, a play on the word Seraphim, if you recall, and Trinity, they're all in the Matrix. They go to the, again, another dungeony, dangerous, vampiric, bondagey EDM club. The name is Club Hell. And it's full of exiles. And you get another badass fighting scene. You got gas mask people doing cartwheels on the ceiling. And there's a curious part before the fight starts where Seraph is walking to the club doors. And the bouncers recognize him. And they call him Wingless. If you watch it with the subtitles, you'll see that. And I thought, well, that's bizarre. And if you dig into that, if you look it up, the storyline is that Seraph used to work for the Merovingian before they both got exiled, but he betrayed the Merovingian to protect the Oracle. So he used to have wings, but he lost them. So the Seraph is like the Seraphim, the winged guardians to heaven, but he lost his wings. That's why they call him the Wingless. And if you want to get real nerdy, which I did, you go into the Reddits and the Substacks on the Matrix, they'll say that the origin story includes the tale of how the Oracle rebuilt the Matrix beta test, which had the Merovingian and the Seraph and all these other exile programs that were supposed to be deleted from the beta test. But they didn't want to be deleted, so they're exiles. And that's why they're vampires or demons or fallen angels. That's exactly what they told you in the one of the previous films. So they make their way past, so that's why these clubs and stuff have all the vampires and the demons and all that stuff. There's a spiritual element to it. So they make their way to the Merovingian, and you know, he calls him Judas, the prodigal son, because Seraph used to work for him, right? It all makes sense now that you know that. And he says there's prices to pay. And the reason he says that is because of all the ideas he presented in Matrix Reloaded, where he was saying everything is causality. Every action has a reaction and a consequence, right? Like he was making mental sexy time with the girls in the club with the desserts. And the reaction was Monica Bucelli, or I got her name wrong. Someone told me I said her last name wrong. Bellucci? Bucelli? I don't remember. She got mad jealous, and she gave up the location of the Keymaster to Morpheus and crew because of that. So the Merovingian, he says, look, here's what I want, and I'll help you guys out. I'll help Neo get out of this train station. I want the eyes of the Oracle in exchange for this release. And Trinity's like, ain't nobody got time for this. And I think she literally says that verbatim. Ain't nobody got time for this. And they start a fight. Everyone's guns go to the Merovingian's head. He gives in. Which to me seemed like a sort of weird cop-out for the film. I don't know why. Now, Neo, he gets to the Oracle. And he sees Sati, who's blissfully in ignorance now. And he wants to know where this goes. Where it ends. He wants the answers. So we get a good dialogue from the Oracle, between the Oracle and Neo, and you're going to find out that he wants to know why he wasn't told the truth this whole time, and she just says, look, it wasn't time for you, buddy.
You helped me to get here, but my question is why? Where is this going? Where does it end?
I don't know.
You don't know, or you won't tell me?
I told you before, no one can see beyond a choice they don't understand. And I mean no one.
What choice?
It doesn't matter. It's my choice. I have mine to make, same as you have yours.
Does that include what things to tell me and what not to tell me?
Of course not.
Then why didn't you tell me about the architect? Why didn't you tell me about Zion and the ones before me? Why didn't you tell me the truth?
Because it wasn't time for you to know.
Who decided it wasn't time?
You know who.
I did. Then I think it's time for me to know a few more things.
So do I.
Tell me how I separated my mind from my body without jacking in. Tell me how I stopped four sentinels by thinking it. Tell me just what the hell is happening to me.
The power of the One extends beyond this world. It reaches from here all the way back to where it came from.
Where?
The source. That's what you felt when you touched those sentinels. But you weren't ready for it. You should be dead. But apparently you weren't ready for that either.
The architect told me that if I didn't return to the source, Zion would be destroyed by midnight tonight.
Please. You and I may not be able to see beyond our own choices, but that man can't see past any choice.
Why not?
He doesn't understand them. He can't. To him, they are variables in an equation. One at a time, each variable must be solved and counted. That's his purpose, to balance the equation.
What's your purpose?
To unbalance it.
Why? What do you want?
I want the same thing you want, Neo. And I'm willing to go as far as you are to get it.
The end of the war. Is it going to end?
One way or another.
Can Zion be saved?
I'm sorry I don't have the answer to that question, but if there's an answer, there's only one place you're going to find it.
Where?
You know where. And if you can't find the answer, then I'm afraid there may be no tomorrow for any of us.
So Neo, he looks at Know Thyself and realizes it was because he wasn't ready, but now he is. Okay, he didn't know thyself before. So he asks how he was able to do all of these godlike things. And she is telling him that the power of the One extends all the way back to the source. Okay, now keep this in the back pocket. The idea she is telling him is that he has a bit of God inside of him. He is a God man. All right. The divine, the divinity is within him. He has now received the gnosis, the wisdom, the Sophia. A lot of big occult ideas are presented in this small exchange. And we're gonna hit this on the wrap up and the conclusion. So he's actually got power that extends way back to God or the source, and that's what he channeled when he took down the sentinels. Right, in the previous movie. And we hear about the architect only seeking to balance the equation. The oracle is here to unbalance it, okay? It's a bit about chaos and order, because those two things are complementary and they go hand in hand. That's why the 33rd degree of Freemasonry has the motto of Ordo Ab Chao, order out of chaos. They know these two complementary forces can be used to gain a certain and particular ends. Ironically, I was watching The Witcher, and that's a similar idea, is that the magicians can channel the chaos and order it in a way using their technique or magic or whatever. And that's what it's all about. And you could apply this argument to a lot of events in history, that anytime they introduce chaos, they know there can be an opposing force of order to complement that, right? So if you can sell the people on an idea of scary terrorism, chaos, you don't know where the terrorists are, then the people will counterbalance that force with order. They would request more order, more law enforcement, more digging into private emails and search and seizure and all that stuff, right? Now, you could argue whether this is really true or necessary or not. I always argue it's hard to really know, but I do know that the powers that be understand how this game works and how those two forces can be used to get to the ends. Like, for another instance, we talk about the thing from 2020 that will never go away, right? Maybe they knew about it. Maybe they cooked it up. Maybe it was a hoax. Maybe it came out of a lab. We don't know. I mean, we can make some pretty good guesses. All I do know is that regardless of how dangerous it is, how real it is, how unexpected or expected it was, or coordinated, regardless of any of those, creating order from that chaos is something they are prepared to do. And it's almost like it gives them the ability to get the things they wanted, kind of like the terrorist attacks. Gave them the ability to read through your emails. Now, does terrorism exist? I mean, sure, right? Sure. Is that a good reaction, or is it based in fear that we allow that to happen? These are all very big ideas, right? So anyway, the architect, he knows this, right? And that's the laws of the universe, chaos and order. And the Oracle is worried about Agent Smith because Agent Smith is a new, I can't think of the terms for this. Like, I want to say polynomial, a new term in the equation. He's going to destroy the whole world because, remember, he exiled out, but he didn't leave. He's now another opposing force in this equation. And the equation is always trying to balance itself out. Because, remember, Agent Smith, he took the body of Bane on, and he's on the Hammer ship right now. That's how the second movie ended, is he's on the ship and you know, dun-dun-dun, what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. Reconciliation of opposing forces to Baphomet. That's what's going to happen. So Seraph, he heads to the Oracle to get Sati, but here comes Agent Smith to get the exiles. Seraph and Sati and the Agent Smith, they make it to the Oracle and they reveal that they, in a very creepy way, they basically reveal to the Oracle that they turned that little innocent girl, Sati, into one of them. As they will then do to the Oracle, as you see unfold. Not looking good. Not looking good for the Zionist or the Matrix AI robots. Agent Smith is running amok. He's going to bring the whole thing down. Meanwhile, down in Zion, Commander Locke talks about how this is the last stand, because you recall the Sentinels were digging all the way down to Zion, where the last real humans are. They're doing their rave dancing in the temple. And they're going to make their last stand there at the entrance to the temple. And the Zion Council includes Cornel West. That was kind of cool, right? They recruit everyone to help make the last stand. Locke, Commander Locke, he's very militant. He's like, look, I want every man, woman, and child, everyone has to fight these things, because if we don't win, we're dead. But meanwhile, the Supreme Counselor, he's all about this prophecy and hope. Like, he's drank the Kool-Aid of Neo, too. And Commander Locke, you know, he's this stoic military guy. He's like, look, hope isn't an indulgent I have time for. I want you to start strapping up these kids with weapons. And so the people in the ship, they're making plans to attack. Neo's like, he's now, you know, conscious now, obviously. He's like, look, I need one of those ships. There's only a couple ships left. He's like, look, I need one of them. I'm going to the Machine City. I'm going to the source. And there's a big argument. They're like, no, we need all the ships. And again, it's sort of this military hope isn't an indulgence I have time for attitude. And then Niobe, she volunteers her ship. She's like, here's the Logos. The Logos, meaning the word of God. Because there's a spiritual element to this whole movie. And if you want more on the Logos, I wrote a book about hip-hop conspiracies called Sacrifice, Magic Behind the Mic. Maybe you've heard of it. I had a whole discussion about the Logos in there, I believe. Talking about the spoken word and the power of the spoken word. which is rap music, right? Or any music, to be fair. In my world, hip-hop's all that exists, though, okay? And a little bit of EDM and a little bit of teenage cheer music. I don't know if you, oh, by the way, I got, if you go to my, all my links, link in all my bios on any of my socials, I got on all my links, I've got now a link to my Spotify playlists that I've curated the last 3 years. I call it Boner Jams. And it's basically just music I listen to. Those are my favorite songs of the whole year. So I got 2021, my favorite songs of the whole year. I can't imagine too many people agree with me, but hey. Check it out. If you like I said on my Instagram, it's like 80% crude hip hop, trap music, 20% teenage cheerleader music. I'm a very complex individual, okay? Anyhow, it's all a bit weird. Because Morpheus, he's kind of blasé about the whole thing. Which is strange, because in the first two movies, he's like super Team Neo. And he doesn't really say anything, which I thought was odd. I don't know if he's just getting sleepy or what. Morpheus needs a little nap. Maybe he's just been deflated with this prophecy and the ups and downs of the Oracle saying Neo's the one, he's not. And he's just like, you know what? I'm going to sit this one out. I don't know if this is really happening or not. So meanwhile, Bane, a.k.a. Agent Smith, he starts his murder spree. He's like, it's time to catch bodies. He's hiding out on Niobe's ship, waiting for Trinity and Neo to hop on board so that they can head to the Machine City, right? So Trinity and Neo get the ship. They're headed to Machine City. Bane lures Trinity down to the Fuse Bay. Big fight. Neo comes to the rescue. Bane has this talk with Neo about who he really is. And it's kind of absurd. Neo is so confused. He has no idea who Bane is. And I'm like, bro, you can't tell the voices are identical? I mean, Mr. Smith has a very clear, distinct voice. But he finally figures it out. He's like, whoa, it's Agent Smith. And you get this strobe light fight filmed in a terrible shaky cam, which this was kind of the first fight scene to do this in the Matrix trilogy with the shaky cam fast movement. And I hate it. I hate it so much. I like the slow motion cam. I want to see all the movements. I don't want to feel the anxiety. I don't want to get a headache. I like the slow motion, and they went fast shaky cam here, and I didn't like that. So Bane, he slams a cable into Neo's eyes. Now he can't see, which is kind of prophetic in a way, because you remember the Merovingian? He wanted the Oracle's eyes. And now Neo, he's got no eyes. What's the connection? I don't know. I just found it very odd. Bane says he's now a symbol of all of mankind, the blind messiah. Now, all very important when you consider the spiritual elements here. Much like the first degrees of initiation for the Freemasons, they put the blindfold on, the hoodwink. Their eyes are closed. It represents the ignorance of the mundane, of the normal sheeple, until you can awaken to the wisdom, the Sophia of Gnosticism. Then your eyes are open. You pull the blindfold off, and now you can see. Ironically, in the Batman trilogy, The Dark Knight Rises, we are introduced to a character also named Bane. And what was Bane's whole story? He was underground, which is where the initiations always happen. It's a very platonic idea, which again will hit at the end of the show. Bane, he talks about how he rose out of this pit, and he says, I could finally see the light, and it was blinding. It was blinding. That's a pretty good Bane voice. Right? I don't always kill the voices, but that was a good one. And the light was blinding. Remember, that's what Bane said. And again, ironically, Bane says the same thing in this movie. Different Bane. But he says it's a symbol of all mankind, because all of mankind is blind to the Gnostic truth that God is within us. Which sounds like a real positive thing until you get to the roots of the Gnostic belief system that the world is a prison. This is all an illusion. We're all in the Matrix. We're all in the gooey pods. But damn, you know what? Neo's God. He can still see. He's got no eyeballs. And he's like Van Damme in Bloodsport when he gets the mist sprayed in his eyes. And he's just like blinking it out. And he's just like blocking punches and pop, pop, pop. He just feels the energy. He's seeing in his through his mind's eye. And he busts this lug nut wrench right over Bane's head. And he gets obliterated. A nice touch on the special effects. They didn't show the gore. They showed the view that Neo has of the world, which is like an infrared sort of camera. So now it's back to business. Trinity got saved. Neo's good to go. His eyes are gone, but he can still see. They're headed to the Machine City. Meanwhile, down in the Zion, Sentinels are getting closer. Morpheus, Niobe, they head to the fight. Military's gearing up for battle. Lots of robo-mechanical robotic things happening, being deployed. They call them the APUs. And this fight sequence takes for absolute ever. The second worst scene of the whole Matrix trilogy, in my opinion. Because when the Sentinels breach Zion, and justifiably so, right? Battle scenes aren't my thing. It's 20 minutes long, but it feels like it's an hour. And it's kind of cool in some ways, but I mean, 20 minutes just felt like too long to me. I don't really get into those sorts of things. It's kind of one of those mindless popcorn deals. It just felt like it kind of slowed the story down to me. So they're fighting, basically. There's a half hour of the movie. They're fighting the Sentinels with these big robotic APUs. Very reminiscent of Avatar. So Morpheus, he gives an update to the council. Kind of saying he still thinks Neo is going to pull something off. So now Morpheus is coming back with that pro-Neo energy right here. He must have got a little nap in or something. So Neo and Trinity, meanwhile, they make it to Machine City, which is a pretty badass scene. You can see the harvesting fields and everything. And Neo is like, hey, we got to follow the three power lines, which again, the Holy Trinity, we got another spiritual element there. It says, you got to follow the three power lines, the Sentinels attack. There's a very beautiful scene where the logo ship makes it up and over the clouds, and they can see the sun. They haven't seen the sun ever. They were born in darkness, and they could see the light, and it was blinding. So they see the sun, which is monumental for them. They've never seen it. And they get a second of it, a second of peace and tranquility back down below the clouds. They crash the Logos. Tragedy strikes. Trinity gets stabbed by a million pieces of rebar or something. But Neo, he doesn't realize what's going on. He doesn't realize she's dying necessarily. And he's like, oh, it's beautiful. This place is beautiful. It's all light. It's built from light, he says. That's very sad. He realizes what happened, and Neo can't face it. And she's like, go on without me. You have to save Zion. Honestly, a very emotional scene. That's why I said in the first movie, the whole Matrix trilogy is a love story. It's a spiritual story and a love story at the same time. And poor Neo, he wants to cry, but he's got no eyeballs. They're gone. So they get one last kiss, and she slips away. And Neo, he resumes the mission. He walks through this world of light, making his way to this balcony of sorts, overlooking this dark, grotesque AI city. Very similar to, if you ever watched G.I. Joe the movie, I know, from the 80s cartoon movie, Globulus and that whole weird bio city thing they were in. It's kind of like that, but with machines. And we're introduced to what appears to be God, right? And I'll put a photo on Instagram. This massive thing that seems to be like the God, the source. And when he sees it, you'll notice there's a big eye. The all-seeing eye of wisdom. And in some ways, it's also reminiscent to the Wizard of Oz. He's finally talking to the guy behind the curtain. And they have this discussion about bartering for peace. Because recall, Agent Smith, he's going to bring everything down. The humans die and the machines die if Agent Smith wins. And they barter out this argument where the AI god is like, look, Neo, I'm going to plug you back into the Matrix. And I'll give you what you want in the end if you can take Smith out, because this Agent Smith guy ain't good for neither of us. And Neo's like, cool, I want you to save Zion. And he's like, okay, we'll do a truce. And the Sentinels stop attacking, because that's the machine god side of the bargain. So the Sentinels are kind of on standby. They're chilling. Like, okay, let's see what Neo can do. Because if he can't, we're going to kill these Zionists anyway. And what follows is an insane fight of epic proportions between Neo and a billion Agent Smiths. The grand finale. And it doesn't disappoint. And they, amidst the fighting, they have some good dialogue. And Smith wants to know why Neo keeps fighting. He says, you know, what's wrong with you humans? Give up. And Neo says, because I choose to.
Why, Mr. Anderson? Why? Why? Why do you do it? Why? Why get up? Why keep fighting? You believe you're fighting for something, for more than your survival? Can you tell me what it is? Do you even know? Is it freedom or truth? Perhaps peace? Could it be for love? Illusions, Mr. Anderson, vagaries of perception. Temporary constructs of a feeble human intellect trying desperately to justify an existence that is without meaning or purpose. And all of them as artificial as the Matrix itself. Although only a human mind could invent something as insipid as love. You must be able to see it, Mr. Anderson. You must know it by now. You can't win. It's pointless to keep fighting. Why, Mr. Anderson? Why do you persist?
Because I choose to.
Now, he says because I choose to because he has decided that it's his free will, which is very odd because the whole movie is about the destiny and the prophecy and all that stuff. But anyhow, they keep fighting. Smith has the upper hand. He takes over Neo's body with his little trick that he does. And he thinks it's over. And he gives a big speech about how everything has a beginning and an end. But hold that thought. Hold that thought. Because Neo, he's plugged into the Machine City God. He's got the power of God within him. And it surges him with power. And this is very curious because you'll see, and I'll put this image on the Instagram too. Isaac Weishaupt on the Instagram, like and subscribe. Lots of cool things going on over there. Link in the show notes. When they zap the power of God through Neo and into the Matrix, he basically gets sacrificed on a cross of light, is what the appearance is. Is that not the Jesus Christ Savior story we're watching? The power goes through Neo, goes into the Matrix, blows Smith into smithereens, pun intended, killing all the Smiths. And the machine god says, it is done. Which could be, again, a reference to the final statement of Jesus Christ. Because he said, it is finished, when he was dying on the cross, fulfilling the prophecy, fulfilling the scriptures. Which, again, Neo is on the cross of light in this film. Now, Neo dies. Smith dies. Trinity dies. The machines apparently hold up to their end of the bargain. The Sentinels do not destroy Zion. The war is over. The prophecy was fulfilled, is what it seems like. And down in Zion, some nerd makes this proclamation in the temple that the war is over. And I captured this screenshot. You got to see this one. There's a woman very clearly with a cross on her arm. Again, another strange reference in there. Coincidence? I don't know. So the machines, they haul Neo's body away in what seems like a funeral in reverence. We see a black cat doing the obvious glitch in the Matrix. Because now we're back. So we leave Machine City and now we see like the real world, the Matrix world, and we see the Black Cat. So the glitch in the Matrix happens, like they reshuffled the Matrix. And then we see the architect walking through a park, meets the Oracle, and he is like, okay, you got it. I'll do it. I'll release the exiles. They're free. And the Oracle, Seraph, that girl, Santi, they watch the sunrise. And the Oracle suggests that they'll see Neo again someday. And Seraph asks Oracle if she always knew, and she says, no, I believed. Apparently, free will is a thing. I don't know. That's what I have to walk away with, because if you recall from the first Matrix analysis, this whole film was a bit of a mind F, if you will. Was it fate the whole time? Free will? Destiny? What are we looking at here? Is everything programmed? It seemed like the thing that broke the programming was Agent Smith. They said that he couldn't save Trinity and Zion. Kind of like how they said he couldn't save Morpheus and himself in the first movie. And that's basically what ended up happening. So it seems like there is not free will. Because the prophecy said that he's not going to save Trinity and Zion at the same time. He has to make a choice. And he tried to do both, but Trinity died. So Trinity did die, and he did save Zion. So in some ways, everyone's saying they have free will, but that's what you would think if you're stuck in the prison with no bars. Now, regardless of the fate or the free will argument, Neo, he goes back to the source. And as he says, it's full of light. It's like a city of light. Recall in Matrix Reloaded, he walked up to the door and it was a door of light. This is an idea you see in... this is our in conclusion. We're going to get deep into the occult philosophy for a second. It's an idea you see in these occult belief systems. It comes under different flavors and names and terms, like Manichaeism and groups like the Cathars, who seem to buy into this idea. But there's this idea of dualism, okay? There's a good God and a bad God, good and evil God. So when they say they believe in the dualism of good and evil, like, sure, a lot of us do. But to them, there's a different meaning to it. They mean there's a good God and an evil God. And most of us say, well, you're talking about like Satan? No. They think the God that created us, that created this world that we live in, is the evil God. The good God is somewhere levels above the evil God. He is the source of light. And this all ties into Gnosticism, of course, where the key to enlightenment is through gnosis, or aka the wisdom, aka the Sophia. Enlightenment, freedom, illumination comes from wisdom, not faith. Only through wisdom is the human mind able to comprehend that we have a divine nature as gods. And we can ascend back or be plugged back into the divine, plugged back into the God of the Matrix here, as you see Neo do in the film. Because that's the real God of dualism, is the light, the source of light, not the false God that created this Matrix world we live in. But this Manichaeism, this goes back to a Gnostic Jewish Christian prophet named Mani from Iraq, and he was kind of crazy, it seems. He says, look, I'm the reincarnation of Buddha, Christ, and Krishna, all of them. That's me. And when you dig into who Mani was, you find out that he was influenced by this quasi-Gnostic text called the Gospel of Thomas, which connects us into Neo, whose real name is Thomas Anderson. He's Doubting Thomas in the first film, remember? So the ideas behind the Gospel of Thomas and Mani were that man can be saved through the secret knowledge that we are all divine, and that the God who the Christians are worshiping is evil. He's the evil God. Once we know this, we can be released from this material prison, this prison that our body, our spirit is trapped within. That's their belief. That's their outlook on it. They think that the God of the Abrahamic religions, God the Father, he's the evil God. He's the Demiurge. He's the Yaldabaoth. And he created this false world as a trap for our souls with its carnal desires. And we have this yearning to break free from this prison and go back to the real God. We intuitively know there's a real God, the source, the light. And this is what Morpheus is talking about when he talks about the splinter of the mind. We know somewhere in there that this ain't it. This ain't right. And that's what all these occult religions and philosophies subscribe to. Going all the way back to Pythagoras and the ideas of Neoplatonism. If you ever... Richard Spence has a good series on secret societies. And he talks about the Cathars and Manichaeism, how there's actually ties to Buddhism as well, which makes sense because you see a lot of these different philosophies in the films. It's hard to know. Like, you think it's just a blender of different spiritualities and religions, but that's kind of what this Gnostic Neoplatonistic idea is, this Manichaeism, this dualism, because there's different flavors of that too. But their idea is that we all know on some level intuitively the splinter in the mind that this is a prison. This is a false reality. We're worshiping a false God. We need to break free from it. How do you break free? How do you release the spirit from this prison? Through death. Yes. That's why they're obsessed with death. That's why the Illuminati is obsessed with death. That's why the Freemasons have skulls all over the place. Memento mori is to think about your death. That's why they're obsessed with population control. Yes, they're really psychopaths, it seems. But the Cathars and some of these older groups, they went as far as to eat vegan diets. Not because of the animal welfare. It's because if you ate animals, you supported the idea of procreation, right? If you're going to eat a chicken, you got to make two chickens, make sexy time to make another chicken or whatever. You know what I'm saying? That's why they didn't do it, because they were so pro-death. Because to them, every life you bring into this planet is energy going back to this false god. Every baby you make is another battery in the goo pod for the AI false gods. So how do you fix that? Everyone's got to die. Boom. Dark, huh? They, in the Matrix, the babies are a trap because they go into the goo pod. And this is akin to all material realm pleasures. These Cathars and kind of older people that subscribe to this stuff, they denied all pleasures of this material realm. And you did that so that you could be reconnected with the divine, the source of true light, the real God of dualism, the God of light, the Sophia, the Gnostic wisdom. And now this is where Neo, as the Jesus Christ Savior, comes back in, where we're going to talk about it. He's basically the Christ figure, for reasons we've talked about countless times on this podcast with all the films, right? And in this one, you see him sacrifice on the cross of light just to drive the point home, as if you didn't know it already. But the mystery religions, the Gnostics, the Manichaeists, and all that, they believe that Jesus wasn't really a god or a man. He was this avatar. And he came from the good God. He was a messenger from the good God showing man the wisdom in action, how to reconnect with the divine. And who killed Jesus? The bad God, God the Father, the evil God. Because he was like, you're not going to give them the secrets. You got to die, right? Which, in some ways, doesn't really make sense, right? Which counters their argument. If he's an avatar, how do you kill him? But anyway. They say that Jesus never took a material form. There was no virgin birth, no death, no rebirth. But Anyways, the evil god is the ruler of this place of suffering, our Matrix. And he provides the material pleasures and the trappings of this hell. And Neo is the Christ figure who's showing man how to find that path out of it. Because he's the one that gets all the godlike abilities. Now, some questions that I'm left unanswered. If we subscribe to this Gnostic evil genius philosophy, and this ties into Buddhism, then why do a lot of those Buddhist ideas and the concept of Plato's slaves in the cave there, they say that suffering is a mental state. And the source of suffering comes from the mind. That's what I've read, right? Because the Gnostics and the Cathars, they say that the source of suffering comes from this evil god. The bad god of the duality, God the Father. Or the architect of the Matrix in this story, I guess. Or maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. That's where I'm a little confused on how to walk away from this movie. Is the splinter in the mind that Morpheus talks about, is that the source of suffering? Like, we constantly know we're living in ignorance. Some of us choose to look at it and find a way out, and some don't. They can ignore the splinter, maybe. And I'm hoping that the Matrix Resurrections answer some of these questions. I'm going to guess not, from the reviews I've seen. They have not all been glowing. Seems to be a love it hate it thing on the Matrix Resurrections, but I'm going to watch it tonight. I've been dodging spoilers like Neo myself, and I'm finally going to watch it. I'll let you know what I see, though. But yeah, the Matrix Revolutions, this is the only movie I've ever seen in the theaters twice. For good reason, right? And that's my whole thing to sum up the whole Matrix trilogy. I don't know how you could really appreciate the Matrix story without the second and third film. A lot of people hate the second and third film, and I don't really get why. And maybe they just don't understand what's the struggle of understanding the nature of reality that comes from this movie. But I thought this was really good. I think it puts a bow on it without answering every single question. Leaves the viewer to maybe come to their own conclusion or do some processing of it, right? So in conclusion, greatest movies of all time. Now, is the Resurrections going to hold up to it? We'll see. I'll find out tonight and I'll let you know. So stay subscribed to the show, my friends, and find out. You know, I always have a call to action for you. Here's my call to action for you. If you know anyone, if you talk to anyone about the Matrix, tell them to check out this podcast. Tell them to check out all the episodes of it. It's a good way to dip their toe into this conspiracy world without being too intimidated, without being feeling too dirty, because it's kind of a dirty word and a kind of a subculture. But yeah, have them check out these shows. Share it with a friend. That's what I want. That's what I ask you to do. It's a good way to introduce someone to some of these ideas. Let's red pill them, you know? All right, thanks for listening. Until next time, stay woke.